Good afternoon. Are any of the folks left in here? Does anyone work in with smoke-free housing? Anybody? Oh, yay! That's exciting. Now I can't just fake my information and say whatever I want, but that's good. Okay. So I just want to take a couple minutes to kind of review what has gone on the last 13 to 15 years, and then talk a little bit about what we've done in Maine and what we all collectively still have left to accomplish. That's who we are. Was introduced, the Breathe Easy Coalition is kind of a umbrella organization, and we work in, we live in Maine. There's 1.3 million people in the whole state. So we encompass several different environments in terms of working on smoke-free policies. And that really works in a state like ours, where there's a lot of crossover of people, resources, and so forth. So just a little bit about kind of where we've been. So I've been doing this work since 2002, which is, 13 years. And in 13 to 15 years ago, no one was talking about smoke-free housing. I mean, it was, remember? It was, a couple of us. There were like five of us around the country that were talking about it, and we found each other and started talking about it more. But we had nothing. There was no support. There was no data. There were no resources. As a matter of fact, I remember specifically sitting down with the federal CDC and having a conversation about how no, smoke-free housing really is important, and you really should fund it, because that was a little edgy for the CDC at that time. It was also edgy for HUD and for EPA and everyone else around the country. So just a little trending there. You all probably keep up a little bit, at least even if you don't do housing work, with the fact that things have changed rapidly. We now have, I heard yesterday, at least 30% of the public housing authorities around the country are tobacco-free. My guess is it's higher than that. But thousands and thousands of private and market rate landlords are smoke-free. But so this is kind of the landscape now. This is only 13 years later. I mean, this has changed really, really fast. We have HUD, EPA, CDC, everyone, not just coming on board, but coming up with toolkits. HUD, of course, has issued multiple memos to their all different types of housing within their portfolios, strongly encouraging them to go smoke-free. There's just scads of reliable and good data out there, whether it be statewide data from California and Maine and Minnesota and other places, but also countrywide data from other countries, and including the U.S. and abroad. But just lots of really great information out there. And to think that, 13, 14 years ago, all we really had at that point was intuition that this was the right thing to do. We had people calling us. We had great reminders, like you guys have been saying. We had great reminders from the people who were impacted by secondhand smoke every day. Calls into our office saying, I have nowhere to go. My neighbor is smoking. I brought my daughter into the ER four times this month. But I live in Section 8. There are two-year waiting lists for me to move anywhere else. I have no options. I just want folks to realize how quickly things have moved, not just over the country, but I'm going to show you evidence from Maine just how fast you can turn a culture around. And I know, again, Maine is really small, but I think our lessons can translate really to any state, or certainly to counties and cities. So a little bit about our current landscape. Like we said, things have changed quickly. I did a little Google search, an image search of smoke-free housing, and I couldn't believe. I mean, there are just hundreds of thousands of Google images around out there for smoke-free housing. If you look up hashtag smoke-free housing, again, hundreds of images and posts and listing. And there's not even a hashtag smoke-free housing movement. It just is organic. So I thought that was great. We have states like Maine and others around the country where all of our housing authorities are tobacco-free. I'll show you some data in a minute that we're pretty proud of that the vast majority of our landlords, private and market rate, are all smoke-free. But what we also know is that the CDC did a great vital signs report earlier this year, just really pointing out, though, that we still have large disparities. Even in our state, where we've done a lot of good work, we still have gaps and disparities. It has changed quickly from, this is information from the CDC Vital Signs report. In 1988 to 91, 90% of non-smokers in our country had measurable levels of cotinine. And in 2011 and 12, that 90% went down to 25% of non-smokers have measurable levels of cotinine. Obviously, 25% is still too high, but it's changed a lot. The unfortunate part, though, is when we break down that 25%, for children, we have 4 out of 10 children, 3 to 11, that have measurable levels of cotinine in their blood. But for black children, it's 7 out of 10. So, you know, those are the areas we really have to start to hone in on. And, of course, in one-third of non-smokers who are renters are still exposed to secondhand smoke nationwide. So a lot of areas that we still have a lot of growth still left. Now, a little bit about Maine data and what we've collected over the last year. We've done 2 statewide surveys over the last 5 years, and this is information kind of comparing those two just massive surveys, which in Maine accounts to 600 landlords and 600 tenants, but that is statistically valid in our state of only 1.3 million. But what we do know now through our efforts, 65% of landlords report having a 100% smoke-free policy in at least one of their buildings. And this is a 20% increase since just 2011. We also know that one-third of landlords are expected to have even more smoke-free housing units available over the next couple of years. So we're building on that, on those cultural changes. We are very proud of the fact that in 13 years, smoke-free housing is now the norm, not the exception. And that's been our goal. Our goal all along is to have demand equal the supply, and we're getting close. We know in Maine, which is pretty much true countrywide, is between 7 and 8 out of 10 tenants prefer smoke-free housing. So our goal from the very beginning has been to see 70 to 80% of our housing stock in Maine, private, public, whatever, be smoke-free. I think just a side note in terms of other areas of smoke-free environments and policy, my side job is that I run the Maine Public Health Association, and we do a lot of tobacco work. And what some of this has done, I mean, all of this, you know, overlaps, right, and intertwines. So a benefit from both sides of things is, when we pass smoke-free housing policies in all of our public housing, or smoke-free housing in all of our public housing authorities across the state, then with my other hat, when I go to the legislature and say, yeah, we need to make parks and beaches smoke-free in Maine, and there's some hedging and obviously a lot of dialogue, and then you start saying, well, you know, we don't have smoking in any of our housing authorities across the state, all of a sudden it kind of shifts the conversation a little, because they're like, oh, you can't smoke in any public housing authority? Yeah, we shouldn't be allowed to smoke on the beach either. I don't know, it just kind of adds to that conversation, adds another little element to conversation. So just a kind of food for thought with that. We do have, I think all of this has mixed together to help us certainly create additional smoke-free policies in Maine. I mentioned beaches and parks. We're one of the first in the nation to pass no smoking in cars with children under 16. And I think all of this all built on each other as part of one kind of big movement. Another piece of this, which we're up to about six states nationwide that have smoke-free disclosure laws. Maine was one of those. So any all landlords have to disclose to any potential or current tenants whether smoking is allowed on the property and where. And again, this is kind of all part of the movement. Once you get a bunch of your public housing authorities to go smoke free, and you know, just like bars and restaurants or anything else, you know, there was no crisis. You know, the sky didn't fall, nothing happened, nobody got evicted just because someone wanted to, you know, wanted an easy way to kick them out using this excuse. So all these pieces just kind of build together, and I think the disclosure policy is, again, something that wouldn't have happened if we hadn't had a lot of voluntary policy happen first. Just another couple pieces from the tenant side of the survey that, I mean, it mirrors the landlord side of it, which is good, that 62% of residents state that they live in a 100% smoke-free building, and that's a 12% increase from 2011. And almost half of the folks who don't live in a smoke-free building say they prefer to do so. We also had 50% say that they would pay a little bit more to live in smoke-free housing. Just a note that we're very careful how we use that data with landlords, because you don't, you know, we don't necessarily want to push the folks, the landlords, to charge more for smoke-free housing. But it just shows the, you know, kind of the elasticity of demand, and it's an interesting piece to have in your back pocket. So in terms of our disparities and our kind of ways that we still have to grow, again, in Maine, it's probably, my guess is our numbers might be slightly better than other folks, mostly because we've done a lot of work over the last, you know, 13 years or so. But we know that 41% of our tenants, of our total tenants, say it's somewhat or very difficult to find smoke-free buildings. And for Section 8 eligible tenants, that number was 48%. So there's a significant difference between the two. But this is going to be this helps us prioritize, of course, our next couple of years. And our focus, at least for the next 2 years, is going to be on those landlords who accept Section 8 vouchers. We're going to be hitting them hard over the next couple of years, doing postcard series, doing webinar series, doing social media campaigns where we target, you know, just landlords who accept Section 8 vouchers. We work with our state housing authority to make sure, you know, they have the list. They have the list. They know exactly who accepts Section 8 vouchers across your state. So if you have a good enough relationship with them, you can either obtain that list or you can work with them to send out information targeting just those landlords who accept vouchers. So just a couple things then for folks who might be newer or to the field or are, you know, a couple years into it. These are just, when I was reflecting on the last 13 or 14 years of what, if you just try to get it down to some bullet points in terms of success and what works. And I think anyone who's been doing this for a long time would come up with basically the same bullet points. Driving up the supply first was very, very important for us, making sure that we didn't get tenants all fired up about smoke-free housing, but then have no smoke-free housing market to provide for them. So we spent the first 5 years of our last 13 just working with landlords. We thought that was really, really important. Funding, there was no funding, you know, 13, 14 years ago, but now there seems to be, especially with the federal CDC having smoke-free housing as an evidence-based priority, you know, there is a lot of funding, or I shouldn't say a lot, but there is funding available, at least to prioritize those efforts. There, of course, are other. We used a lot of private grants and working with community partners in terms of funding our efforts in the beginning. EPA, you know, has the regional grants. We got a couple of those. Those are great resources to look for. But I would also say, anyone who's heard me talk about smoke-free housing before knows that everything that we've done has been done on like just this minuscule budget. Really, really small budget. It's something like $1.5 million total over 13 years. And again, I realize our state is small, but that's like nothing in terms of money. So don't let the funding hinder you. If you can only get, you know, $100,000 for your effort, you can do a lot with $100,000. Forget direct mails, forget, you know, TV and radio and all that kind of stuff. Use social media. It's so cheap. You know, use email. Work with, like I said, work with your state, your housing authority, your state housing authority. Work with folks like that can give you free access to the folks that you want to talk to. In terms of messaging, my bottom line on this is just be clear, concise, focused on cost. We had to remind ourselves many, many times at the beginning of these efforts that landlords do not care about the health of their tenants for the most part. Sorry if anyone's a landlord, don't mean to offend. Sorry, it's true. They're not in the business of health. They're in the business of making money. That doesn't make them bad or anything else. It's just a fact. So you have to talk to the audience with the messages that resonate with them. So no health messaging with landlords. That's like bottom of the list message. And it's hard for us public health people to remember that, but you have to keep remembering that. And then building on the partnerships, I've mentioned it a couple times, but there are so many partners out there that you might not think about. Just get creative. I mean, this is really how we got the majority of our work done and continue to get the majority of our work done. Working with the state fire chief and the local fire departments, I mean, this is a big issue for them. In most of your states, it's the number one cause of fire death. Is cigarettes. It's not in Maine anymore because we have done all this work. But in most of your states and across the country, it's the number one cause of fire death. Your fire people want to work with you on this. Go to them. Talk to them. Create a little fact sheet with them. You know, work with your state fire chief and see if they'll email it out to every fire chief around the state. They'll do stuff like that for you. They want to do stuff like that with you. Where, of course, your rental associations and your housing associations, your social service agencies, maybe you can't get your public housing authority to go smoke-free. I mean, a couple of our housing authorities, we actually had to wait for the executive director to retire till we could get them to pass a policy. So work with your homeless shelters in those cities. Work with your social service agencies to see if they can figure out an incentive for folks providing low-income housing. You know, give them an extra point. Get them an extra point on their application for providing smoke-free. We also have a statewide tax credit. We were the first in the nation to a one-point tax credit within our application, our QAP application for 100% tobacco-free buildings. It's now a threshold requirement in Maine. There's no point. Everybody just has to do it. But those things, if you get stuck on one thing, that's my point of the last one there, of utilizing various methods. If you get stuck in one area, I mean, you have to keep working on it, but go, you know, don't get too stuck. Go find someone else. Find another avenue. Because those successes all build on each other. The other thing I would just mention is in terms of landlords, build a network of landlords. Figure out a way to have them talk to each other. Because it really, I promise there will be a domino effect. If you're not having a lot of success now, if you just get one or two of them, spend a bunch of time on one or two of them. And then you will see a domino effect. But figure out a way to facilitate them talking to each other. So they're not just relying on you, the one who's, you know, the public health person or the state person or the whatever. Have them talk to each other, because I don't know about you guys, but I've never in all my years talked to a landlord that was upset about passing a smoke-free policy. Nobody regrets this. I think I've never heard talked to anyone who says, oh yeah, I've worked with landlords and they hated it. It just doesn't happen. They save money. They feel good about it. They don't have as much cleanup. You know, goes on and on. So have them talk to each other. A couple other things we have done in terms of our in terms of working with the state housing authority too are really our biggest ally. And that took a couple of years to establish, but. Is they also, I think every state now has a housing search. I think they're required to have a housing search, you know, where potential renters or tenants can get on and search for housing in your state. Work with them. We've been working with our folks a long time, and it's been very successful to include a searchable, smoke-free, whatever it's called,
field.
Thank you. So, and that doesn't seem like a big deal, but again, it's a little piece of a cultural shift that everyone who wants smoke-free housing should be able to, at the very least, at least search for it. Hopefully they can find it. But it's a signal to the tenants that our housing authority, that our state housing authority supports it, and it's a signal to the landlords that our state housing authority supports it. So two really big pieces there. We also kind of, once we got our state housing authority on board with that, we just did all kinds of things with them. Once we found the right person in the organization who had just a little bit of time to dedicate to this, we did some fact sheets with them. We made sure it went on their website. It was a little buried, but still, it went on their website. We had them include, maybe we wrote them, but we wrote little newsletter articles for them to put in their newsletters. Every state has these, does the same type of stuff. And most of the time, you just have to write it, and they will put it in their e-newsletter or whatever else. Same with the landlord associations and other folks. You just have to write it. You don't even have to write it. You can find one that we wrote and just cross out Maine and put, you know, Utah or whatever. So work, webinars, all kinds of different things with our state housing authorities. But again, that kind of dominoed into social service agencies, into all different kind of folks around the state. And then Am I good? I don't have a watch. Oh, well, good. That's how you might find me if you need me. And we're available for questions, so I guess I'm just going to stop there.